This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is drip.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Fumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Happy Friday, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. I'm Evan Sharpley, and in for Sean Stiers this week is Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune, ND Insider. Tyler, you guys just moved out of the Trib office, I saw.
Yes,
we did. What's that been like? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's we're in a little bit of a transitive state. We'll be eventually moving into the Studebaker building, but we are currently housed in Union Station. For temporarily until the Studebaker building is set up for us, and so a little bit of a transition, especially with being the end of the football season. I've tried to even stay out of it as much as I can. I made sure everything was packed up and my stuff got moved over, but been working a lot from home with the season going on. But now that the season is over and we're just waiting for the bowl game, I'll move into Union Station and get working there. It's kind of interesting. We're working in an old train station right now. Kind of a funny setup, but plenty of room for us to work and get everything done we need to. But it's when you walk in, it's just like a giant hall, and then there's all these different rooms, and then in the different rooms is where we're set up. But there's someone has a Nerf football in the office, and so we've been taking advantage of all that open space in the middle. We've been throwing the football around a little bit the couple times I've been in there. So it's an interesting time for the Tribune, but hopefully we were using so little of the South Bend Tribune mm-hmm. building downtown anymore. So it sort of makes sense that we would move to a building that better suited us. And I'm excited to see how the Studebaker building fits our needs. We'll be in there hopefully by the end of March, I think was the last estimate we were given. So we will see how that goes.
Well, Tyler, I appreciate you stepping in for Sean. We've got a great show ahead of us. We're going to talk kind of what's been going on over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, it's one of my favorite times of the year. There's a lot of food consumed, although I think I eat quite a bit year-round myself anyways. But we'll talk a little Stanford wrap with Notre Dame's final regular season game. We'll look at what's coming up this weekend as far as some conference championships, discussion on the playoff. How does it look right now? Should it be expanded? Really, bowl season, too, I think, plays in that. So we'll talk a little bit about bowls, where Notre Dame is likely to end up. And then kind of a step towards the future on guys that may be leaving the program, guys that certainly are through graduation, and then, you know, maybe some names that are going to be taking a larger role here as we move into 2020, and certainly recruiting plays into that too. So we'll get your take on that. But other than the South Bend Trib move, everything else good in your world?
Yeah, all good. Made the trip to Stanford. Got a little bit sick, not in any serious way. Just got a little bit of a cold from that travel, and we had a bit of a long, delayed return back.
The weather was subpar, I would say.
Yeah, I've been in San Francisco twice now for the Stanford game, and both times it rained on the Sunday after the game. So the free time that we did have wasn't exactly sunny California, but everything's good now, and we'll move on. I think we should mention that Sean's absence isn't specifically related to the Cowboys losing to the Bears last night. I don't know. I don't know if he's staking out Jerry Jones's house right now to get some changes made with the Cowboys, but certainly a bad loss for the Cowboys last night, and myself as a Bears fan was quite surprised by the way that turned out. So.
Well, to kick things off, let's go with a quick, being that it is the holidays, a quick kind of rapid-fire questions, and we'll get into the Stanford game.
Sure.
So for you, favorite Thanksgiving food?
Stuffing is my favorite go-to.
My man.
I like stuffing. I always have to mention one or a combination that we do that's kind of different at my family. We do these dumplings with sweet and sour cabbage. It's like a family tradition, which I don't know that you would get many other places. So I always have to show love for that. Actually, this year, my parents are going to hate me for saying this on air, but they did a below average job on the stuffing this year, so I was a little upset about that. But maybe next year I'll have to pitch in and help out. But the meal was great. Enjoy getting to have some time with the family. But stuffing's my go-to. What's yours?
Stuffing's mine too. Okay. But there aren't too many things I turn away.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think I was eating leftovers for a few weeks, and we had plenty of food, so it was really good. Now, are you a Black Friday shopper?
I'm not normally, no.
Okay.
But I do. Cyber Monday is more usually my game.
I'm skipping to that question.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, what was your best Cyber Monday purchase this year?
I actually purchased a PlayStation 4 controller. I needed a new PlayStation 4 controller and got one pretty cheap online, and I don't do a ton of shopping. It's tough because I travel for the Notre Dame game, and so Friday for Black Friday, I was traveling out to California, and then we got back Monday morning at 5 a.m. So I wasn't getting right on the computer for Cyber Monday deals, but I was able to take advantage of some eventually. Did you get anything?
I got nothing. I did zero Black Friday shopping.
Okay.
The wife was out of town. She was actually in California, not for the game.
Okay.
She was visiting family. So I was on dad duty the whole weekend, which was pretty fun.
Did she find a sunny part of California, or was
it? No, actually it wasn't great when she was there either. So I guess you guys picked the wrong time to go.
Yeah, that's right.
What small business did you support on Saturday?
I don't know that I supported any small businesses on Saturday. Let's see, where do we go? On Sunday, we went to like a local breakfast diner, so I guess that would be my best contributions to a small business. I don't know that we did eat at like a Mexican restaurant on Saturday night after the game, which is kind of weird because normally when we cover Notre Dame football games, we don't really eat dinner after games because they rarely play at noon locally.
Right.
Or they played at 1 out in Stanford, so we were done at a normal hour and could eat dinner at a restaurant, so that was kind of cool. So I guess we supported that local Mexican restaurant, which I think was called Celia's, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong.
Now, you're a big burger guy, right?
Yes. Okay. I enjoy myself some burgers.
Now, there's discussion, of course, when people go to the West Coast. Where do you stand on that?
We did go to In-N-Out. That was actually one of the first things we did. Not that it's a priority to me, but we wanted food, and it wasn't that far from where we were when we got our rental car. But to me, I mean, In-N-Out is good. The key to In-N-Out is avoiding the fries. The fries are a complete waste of time. You might as well get a second burger if you really think one burger is not enough for you. So I actually gave that advice to our photographer, Michael Caterina. He did not listen to me. And then we got back to the hotel and we're eating it. And he's like, I should have listened to you. It's like, yeah, I know what I'm talking about. But In-N-Out's good. Whataburger, which is the preference of Carter Carls, a native Texan on our Sup and Tribune staff, I think it's a bit overrated. I think In-N-Out's a bit overrated too. So I mean, going to Five Guys is fine with me.
Yeah.
I like Five Guys. I grew up in the area, so Redimax is my was something I grew up with. So I love Redimax. Although I don't know if it's a growing older thing or not, but I feel like Redimax quality may have slipped a little bit. I think they've expanded their menu and catering to more of the out of town folks, I feel like. So I think Redimax has certainly changed since I've grown up. I grew up in the area since I was little, and my parents are actually from New Buffalo, met in New Buffalo in high school. That's kind of my burger stance. I'm trying to think if there's anyone. I haven't had what's the Shake Shack? Yeah. I haven't had Shake
I had
Shack
that for the
yet.
First time.
Where would you rank Shake Shack in the?
I would actually say that's below In-N-Out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was okay. I Five Guys is my jam.
Sure.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I'm
there with you.
And you didn't know when you're listening to Sean and Sharpley that here in the off season we'd be talking about food, but since you're probably bulking in the off season, you know,
right.
Now you've got some burger joints to try. But Lucy and I on Saturday mornings, my daughter, we go to Sky Zone.
Okay.
And we do toddler time and jump. And if you didn't know, in the area, Five Guys does open at 10 a.m. at the mall over there.
Oh wow. All right.
So we're normally order number one with a burger and a shake. So
burgers, all right.
You didn't think you would want a burger at 10 a.m. but after jumping around with the toddler for an hour, you definitely do.
All right,
let's close this one up. We're obviously transitioning now. Did you have any Christmas music playing before Thanksgiving, or is that a rule?
No, I'm not that big into Christmas music before Thanksgiving. I set up my Christmas tree just yesterday, actually. I I don't have a hard stance on it. I think people go a little bit overboard. I like Thanksgiving so much. I was like, let's give Thanksgiving its own time and wait till we get into the Christmas season after Thanksgiving. But if people want to be all about it, that's fine. I personally haven't listened to any Christmas music. I did hear some when I came into the studio today, but I should probably get that in rotation. We're less than 3 weeks away now.
Well, we put a wrap on this Notre Dame regular football season here in 2019, and Notre Dame now three straight seasons with 10 wins, and a pretty cool stat, I believe. They've won 32 games now since their 4-8 season. So since the regular season ended at 4-8, they've won 32 games in the span then. Since then, a great stretch for this Notre Dame football program. As you said, you were out there, at Stanford. Kind of a weird game.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
There are a lot of people ready to, I don't know.
Fire some folks.
Yeah, there within the first half. And certainly ND Twitter was, as I usually like to post, a dumpster fire fairly quickly.
Yep.
As are most message boards, I'm sure, as well.
Sure, yeah.
But what was your general feel? A few takeaways. I know on ND Insider, you guys wrote quite a few articles just about the feel of the game. Certainly at Notre Dame, if there isn't a chance to win a conference championship and the college football playoff is off the table at that point, you could possibly start lackluster.
Right.
And maybe they had too much stuffing, too, the day before. I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird because both teams came out and scored on their first drives, and it's like, oh, man, we might be in for a shootout, because I think we all knew Stanford's defense wasn't very good, but I don't think that we thought that Stanford would be able to move the ball on Notre Dame's defense as well as it did to start the game, and it did pretty successfully on its first few drives, and Notre Dame's defense settled in, which Notre Dame has played a lot of games. I think they've had six games this season where they shut out the opposing team in the first quarter, but they've had some other games where they've struggled a bit, but they've made some adjustments for the most part. Beyond the Michigan game, I think the defense has responded well. And even in the Michigan game for a while there, they kind of steadied the ship and allowed Notre Dame's offense to potentially make it a game. They weren't really able to do that, and sort of the defense broke towards the end of the game to make it a blowout. But I thought the defense responded well. It was kind of interesting that it all sort of turned on a blocked punt by Isaiah Foskey, of all people, who Notre Dame had been holding out of the lineup because they only wanted him to play four games to keep his redshirt season. And so they waited for the Stanford game, which is like a little bit more than an hour away from where he went to high school. So kind of a cool homecoming opportunity for him. And I think it's not only interesting that it was him to do it, that he made a play on special teams where, I mean, sometimes if you're a freshman and you're not really involved that much and you haven't been playing special teams on a weekly basis, that maybe you don't necessarily put as much effort into a simple punt return like that, but he was able to get in there and he made it look kind of easy, and Notre Dame wasn't able to score on that play, but set up a score short thereafter with returning the fumble to the 1 yard line. And I think the offense sort of rediscovered what was working for it. I thought they relied on a lot of motions and using jet sweeps and play actions, I thought were very integral into what the offense is doing. Certainly when we see Braden Lindsey more involved in the offense, I think that is going to be a thing moving forward. And Chris Fink wasn't available for the offense. He had a hamstring issue, and so they went with a lot of two tight end sets, and then also played Lawrence Keys and Braden Lindsey together in three wide receiver sets, and threw the ball to Chase Claypool more. I think he didn't get the ball too much early on, and then certainly the 40, I believe it was a 41-yard touchdown. They ended up giving Notre Dame the lead before halftime. It's like, oh, well, I guess all the issues are solved and we don't have to panic too much and set up a second half, which certainly things could have went back in Stanford's direction in the second half, but Notre Dame came out and kept moving the ball. Was able to run the ball a little bit, especially more in the second half than the first half, and change things up a little bit, and really kind of controlled the game thereon in the second half. And certainly you'd love to go out there and build up an early lead right away, but that's sometimes football doesn't work that way. And so I think it's understandable the frustration that Notre Dame fans have sometimes when it's not going their way. But to me, it's funny when they're like, we always play like this. We're never prepared. It's like they've been blowing out teams on a pretty regular basis within the last few weeks. And
I did get word. They didn't practice all week. They did not prepare.
And like I mentioned, they shut out teams six times in the first quarter. So you got to be prepared to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes fan reaction just goes a little bit overboard and gets too wrapped up in feeling like everything happens poorly always, and that's not how things work out. So I thought it was a good performance overall. They even got John Shannon a game ball, the long snapper, mm-hmm. who recovered a fumble on a punt. So I thought it was a good game for Notre Dame, and another good game for Ian Book. I thought he played pretty well and settled in, and has really looked improved in the last stretch of the game, pretty much since that Virginia Tech game-winning drive. Has looked like a calm, cool, collected quarterback and seems to be making more decisions, or more correct decisions, and getting the ball in his playmakers' hands, and that's what this offense needs.
And looking at Ian Book, too, and I'm right now reading Eric's article on ND Insider, looking from year to year, you know, even though his pass efficiency went down slightly, it wasn't a big drop. Mm-hmm. You did see an improvement in his touchdown-interception ratio. The general feel, though, I think overall, and maybe now that this season is over, right, and we're sitting here saying Notre Dame's at 10-2, I think the question that popped up quite a bit during the year was, what really is this team's identity? And I think going in, a lot of it was centered around Ian Book, especially on the offensive side. Do you feel like an identity was really established through the 12 regular season games?
I don't know. I think they still are relying on Ian Book. I think they would like to be more of a run-first team and influence defenses with the way they can run the ball, but that hasn't been the case. But even in the Stanford game, they were using a lot of play actions that were still working in RPOs that were able to take advantage of the defense and the defense of the linebacker specifically moving up and opening up some room in the middle of the field for the receiving game. And even though Notre Dame wasn't running the ball, it was still fooling the defense, and the defense still had to respect Notre Dame's running game. So I think the identity is that Ian Book is going to win or lose a lot of games for us right now. I think that's kind of how it is. Maybe it's a little unfair to him to be in that situation. But I think without them really having go-to running backs in the running game, and obviously they're down two starting offensive linemen, although I think Trevor Rowan and Josh Lugg have done a pretty good job of coming in there and making sure that this offense isn't a train wreck with them in there. I think they've done a good job. There's even improvements in the running game numbers. Obviously, those are a little bit impacted by them being in blowout games and, mm-hmm. and having more opportunities to run the ball. But I think that they've done a pretty good job of being coming in there and not being big question marks. And then so I think the bowl game, I'm interested to see what they can develop in these few weeks before the bowl game to see if there's anything different about this Notre Dame team that we haven't seen yet, or if it's kind of the same old team. If they can't run the ball, they're going to not be afraid to abandon it and just kind of lean on Ian Book to make a lot of decisions, whether it's him throwing the ball or even running the ball at times, whether it's design runs or just escaping on some scrambles. But this offense, while it isn't necessarily as consistent as you like it to, it still has explosive players and still can make plays. When you have guys like Chase Claypool and Cole Kmet, you have guys that you know you can rely on in the passing game. And with the emergence of Braden Lindsey, Chris Fink returning before, obviously, the Stanford game with his hamstring injury, returning to a more reliable form, that there are a lot of weapons in this passing game that they can sort of take advantage of.
You're listening to Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. I'm Evan Sharpley, along with Tyler James, ND Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Tyler, let's do this. We'll get into this weekend's slate of conference championship games, but while we're on the topic, you know, let's talk about then what Notre Dame is going to want to accomplish and maybe what that bowl landscape looks like. Certainly, the games are going to have to be played this weekend for some of that dust to settle. Notre Dame's going to be able to have their bowl practices and probably, you know, get some younger guys some experience and some repetition as we move into 2020. Right now, where's it looking like Notre Dame's going to end up playing? Who's their possible opponents? And really, what can be the goal or takeaway from this, I guess, extended preseason that really started
right
after they lost to Michigan.
Yeah. I think so. It seems like the most likely bowl destination for Notre Dame will be the Camping World Bowl, and that would mean that Notre Dame would play against a Big 12 opponent. So the pool is Kansas State, Texas, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, probably one of those teams. They're not going to be playing against either Oklahoma or Baylor. It would probably be the third or fourth best team in the Big 12. So not a ton of names. Texas, I think fans would maybe get excited about because Notre Dame, Texas seems like a big deal, but Texas isn't very good this year. So I don't know how much Notre Dame is going to get tested playing against a Texas team.
Although both fan bases will probably travel okay.
Yeah. I imagine anyone that's putting together the game would be happy to have Notre Dame and Texas play regardless of what their records are. I would be the most interested in seeing them play against Oklahoma State because Chuba Hubbard as a running back is one of the best running backs in the country, and see how Notre Dame's defense would handle that challenge. I don't know. Is there any of those teams that you would be excited for to see Notre Dame play? And do you think that fans would take anything from that, or that even us as media, we could glean anything about the program?
The question usually as asked is, does it affect the following season?
Right.
And I'll say winning does help. You know, it helps morale. It helps, kind of the overall feel inside the building. If you go out and you lay an egg, you know, that's a sour taste in your mouth. And then the message from the coaches is, okay, let's just completely close the book on last year versus let's use this momentum going into, you know, whether it's the weight room, it's some of the things that you do in the spring. Can it be a trampoline effect? And I think so. I'm not going to overplay it and say it's going to be a turning point.
Right.
Now, if you're, you know, a one-loss team or you're playing in the college football playoffs and whatever that may be, and probably more New Year's Six, and it's a statement win against a big-time program,
sure.
Maybe, right? That maybe could be like, hey, guys, we can point to that as the turning point that's like, that's the reason why we won the national championship in 2020.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that. So for me, you know, I have a tough time now getting really excited about bowl season.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm interested, you know, your thoughts on what could make bowl season more appealing. I think certainly sports betting probably has increased, you know, some fans' interest, and not just fans of specific teams, but, you know, if you have all 100 bowl games, and I don't think there's 100 bowl games now, but you get my take now. You know, with teams that have won 5 games and are playing in bowls, but you know, your confidence picks on who's gonna win the different games. So, you know, what can the NCAA do as far as this postseason, and, you know, is concerned to make bowl games a little more relevant and followed? And how does the playoff really help or hurt that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd maybe be an outlier, because I cover Notre Dame every week when they're playing, so I don't get to watch as much other college football as I'd like to, just because I'm working and covering Notre Dame, and that's where my focus is. So I really like bowl season because I get a chance to see a lot of teams that I don't, and I don't necessarily have Notre Dame games to cover every day that all these other games are going on. So there's only a couple games a day, and you can sort of watch as many or as few as you want to. So I enjoy it. I think anytime you can put football on TV and there's not much else going on, I'll probably be tuning in. I don't know how to get fans that excited about it. I think, like you mentioned, Notre Dame, sometimes you can use a bowl game and point to it as like a turning point, but Notre Dame's program right now, they don't need a turning point. They just need another chance to get back into the college football playoff, and they can't really do that until next year. So I think that it's natural to have some fan apathy when it comes to the bowls. But you got to remember, the other programs might not be in the same position their other fan bases. I think, so, like, take Oklahoma State, for example. If they were able to play Notre Dame in a bowl game, I imagine they would be pretty fired up about that, and certainly look at that as an opportunity to beat Notre Dame and really propel their program forward. So I think that bowl season is fun to me. I don't think the playoffs really have taken away from the bowl. I think it maybe has taken away from some of the other bowls, where, like, the New Year's Six bowls, I think there's still prestige attached to those. I think fans, like, fans want to see Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl, and then they're maybe upset that the ACC is not going to, the way the ACC contract works out, Notre Dame's not going to end up in that situation this season. But to me, I don't know. I think that I don't put too much stock in that. I think that maybe where I differ from maybe some fans that have some nostalgia too. Nostalgia related to these bowls, I think, like, obviously the Rose Bowl to me is a pretty cool venue and something that I think a lot of people would like to at least attend at some point or see their team play in at some point. But to me, I don't know. I think it may have hurt the luster when it comes to those bowls, but I still think the fans that know the tradition behind those bowls still value them, and they want their program to play in those games. So I don't see a ton of drop off between what the bowls are now and what they were before the college football playoff, but I imagine if TV stations are losing money because of bowl audiences or something like that, they'll try to find some sort of solution that can fix that. But I'm not sure if there's a big problem to fix. What's your kind of view on that? Well, you sound like you're not too enthused about bowl season.
No, I'm not. And I think part of it too, and where I'm going with this is, you know, and looking at, let's just look right now outside of the top 10 in the college football playoff rankings. Penn State sitting at 10. Then you've got Auburn, Alabama, Oregon, Michigan, Notre Dame, Iowa, Memphis, Minnesota, Boise State, Cincinnati, Appalachian State, USC, Virginia, Navy, and then Oklahoma State. At that right there, for you, and obviously contracts are at play with how bowls are set up, what would your dream pick for a bowl game for Notre Dame to play? And I think where I'm going with this is, could you have more high-profile matchups? Now, you'd have to get away from allegiances to specific bowls and how those conferences are aligned, but I mean, wouldn't I pose this question? Wouldn't it be cool to play Michigan again?
Sure, yeah.
Or suit up against Alabama? You know, I mean, see where you are, because you know, versus, not that you aren't going to learn something against a team like Texas or an Oklahoma State, but if the conversation for Notre Dame is, we graduate everybody and our goal is to win national championships, and you could say, well, Alabama's sitting at 12 with two losses.
Right,
they're
right.
Obviously not getting in the playoffs, but they're a team that is traditionally, how could we measure up against that?
Yeah, and I think there is some sort of outside chance that Notre Dame could get into the Citrus Bowl and play either Alabama or Auburn. And I think it has something to do with Georgia beating LSU. I think Wisconsin would have to beat Ohio State, and a few different things would have to happen, which seem unlikely. But I think, so in your mind, you'd rather see, like, maybe bowls just have individual, just not have
conference affiliations. The two, you know,
and they have like
look
a
at top 25.
So
yeah, look at your top.
The playoff
top
goes
25.
First, and then say the Rose Bowl gets third pick, and they get to pick whatever two teams they want.
Yeah,
I mean, that would be interesting. I don't know how that would work on the bowl side of things. I think probably the financials are really tied into their agreements with conferences and having some sort of familiarity with the teams that they're bringing in. But yeah, I think, I mean, that would be kind of interesting. It's almost like a fantasy football kind of thing. Okay, go ahead and make your favorite matchups and see what bowls could do. And maybe then the teams themselves have maybe more of a say we don't want to play in that game. We're going to play in this game. I mean, it'd be interesting. It'd probably be more of a mess.
We challenge you behind
the scenes. Yeah. And then there'd be people saying things publicly and then maybe like not actually saying that behind the scenes and not taking teams up on their opportunities. So that would be interesting. It would be a fun wrinkle, but I don't know how that would all work out.
Well, Tyler, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk conference championships. We'll do a little prop bet, see where you stand on some of your picks, and then we'll talk the future of Notre Dame football. You're listening to 96.1, the sports leader.
Yeah.
Can you feel it, baby?
Oh, yeah.
A little Marky Mark here on Friday. It's a great Friday out. It's kind of nice out, isn't it? Not too bad.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Good December Friday.
It is a good December Friday as we kick off the weekend and conference championships are being played around the country. College football, we've got a few pretty good matchups. And if you'd like to go watch a game, Darren Revell and you sent me this, Tyler.
Sure. Yep.
The ticket prices for Power 5 title games on StubHub right now, if you're in the Pac-12, $32.88. It's not bad. I think I could go. The ACC, $46.77. The Big Ten, right around 50 at $49.89. The Big 12, $55.96. And the SEC, Tyler, how much for a ticket for that one?
$255.76. So $200 more dollars than the Big 12 StubHub get-in price. So quite the difference there.
Have you been to a conference championship game?
No, I don't think so. I've never. It wouldn't be that hard to go down to the Big Ten championship game, but I've never been to one. Certainly with Notre Dame not being in a conference, that doesn't align me to be working at one. But I think I don't know. To me, I think maybe your feeling about the bowl season is maybe how I feel about these conference championship games. I feel like they don't necessarily mean a lot. When you talk about, you got Oklahoma and Baylor, they've already played each other. Clemson and Virginia, we're really that excited about that matchup. Ohio State and Wisconsin have played each other. So if I had to pick one of those games to pay that price to get in, I think I might pick the cheapest one, which is Utah-Oregon. And not only just because it's cheap, but I think I'm interested in that matchup. And certainly you're talking about a team in Utah that is trying to get into the college football playoff and so would need a impressive performance potentially to leapfrog Georgia, or obviously beat out Oklahoma or Baylor, the winner of that game. I think that's most likely who Utah is going to be in the conversation with. So that's probably the most entertaining to me. Obviously, LSU Georgia is maybe the end up being the best game, but $255, that's a lot of money for a football game. So I don't know that I can afford paying that, but. I think Ohio State, Wisconsin, maybe you could be there. Oklahoma, Baylor, I think at least with that, you're guaranteed to see a lot of points. It should be entertaining. It's not necessarily going to put you to sleep or anything, but I think any of those games don't get me – none of those games get me really excited, although LSU, Georgia, I kind of want to see how Georgia stacks up against LSU just because I've seen Georgia play in person this year, and Georgia's had a bit of a disappointing season, and I would anticipate that LSU even has a chance to blow them out, but we will see. What about you? Which one would you pay that price for to get in?
I don't know. I like sitting on the couch and watching games. I've gotten really good at that. But if I had to go to a game, I went to a Big Ten championship game a few years back, Penn State Wisconsin. It was a really good game.
Yeah.
Again, I grew up in Big Ten land, obviously,
right,
so
sure.
that was the most appealing. But I think it'd be fun to travel and maybe check out an SEC championship game at some point. I mean, there's still a couple of SEC teams and a couple other conferences too where I have bucket lists where I'd like to go just watch a game,
sure,
as a fan.
Right,
I think would be a lot of fun. And and kind of looking at these slates right now, I think Utah is favored by about a touchdown right now, and some of the predictions I've seen, there's some that are saying it could end up being a 12-point victory for Utah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen really either team play too much as far as Utah and Oregon, similar to you, because, which I think is so funny, you're so tied into kind of what's going on with Notre Dame.
Yeah.
There were times when I was, on the beat a little bit closer where I was like, man, I wonder if the same types of things happen at other programs, like as far as like what's going on
right.
on message boards and how things are on social media too.
Well,
so.
It's funny, the Football Writers Association of America, which I'm a part of, we vote on an All-American team and we vote on various awards. I don't feel educated enough to vote on right. some of the things that they ask us to vote on, and certainly we're not required to vote on these things, so we can pass. But when we're voting for the All-American, even myself as someone who appreciates offensive line play, I don't know who the best offensive linemen in the country are playing this season because there's no easy way to kind of look that up. You have to rely on someone else's opinion and then maybe do some research from there. But I'm a voter for the Biletnikoff Award, so I've done a lot of research on the wide receivers this year. So I've taken the time to do research beyond what I would normally do, because obviously they've asked me to vote on that, and I have a Heisman vote, so I do research on that. That's a bit easier because you're talking about the best players in the country,
right.
So you have access to that. But when you're talking about line play and stuff like that, there's not stats that you can rely on to make those opinions. So it is kind of interesting when you're so invested in covering one team, you maybe miss out on some of the national perspective.
Educate us then a little bit on those two votes that you have, the Blitnikoff and then Heisman, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so right now, where are you sitting on both those? And how much can you tell us?
So, no, I can tell you, we have to vote for, the deadline is, there's one Sunday, Sunday is the Blitnikoff deadline, and then Monday is the Heisman Trophy deadline. For the Blitnikoff, there's three finalists. Mm-hmm. And then you have to rank the three finalists in preferential order. And then for the Heisman Trophy, you just submit three names. And then you have to submit three names. You can't submit less. You have to put a first, second, and third. I'm not.
Are you pretty protective about those?
No. I think I'm going to vote for Joe Burrow. I'd be surprised if I don't vote for Joe Burrow for Heisman. Mm-hmm. The Blitnikoff, I'm not sold on for sure yet. I could be potentially swayed this weekend, but I think that it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't think the three finalists are the three guys that I submitted because the way the voting process worked, there was we had to vote for a top 10. And then we vote for a top three from the top 10 that comes out. Mm-hmm. And then now there's a three finalists. We get to vote on which ones we want for that. So I think it'll be interesting to see who wins. The three finalists are, I believe, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Pittman Jr., Ja'Marr Chase at LSU, and CeeDee Lamb of Oklahoma. Obviously, those guys are both playing this weekend, so they could do something in conference championship games that maybe sway a win in their direction. CeeDee Lamb has the worst numbers of those guys, although I think he could be maybe the most explosive receiver in the country. Michael Pittman has crazy numbers for USC. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he didn't against Notre Dame, only had four catches, so that's kind of an interesting side note. And Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson as well for LSU have some pretty ridiculous numbers with Joe Burrow at quarterback, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think Joe Burrow probably has the Heisman Trophy wrapped up unless something catastrophic happens this weekend against Georgia. So I think a lot of it is, okay, who are the second and third place votes when you talk about that? So I could already have submitted my vote. There's nothing preventing me from voting before Monday for the Heisman Trophy, but I think it's important to wait until Monday to get everything out there to vote for those guys for second and third place, because that impacts who gets to actually go to the Heisman ceremony. So I think that's important. So I'd like to get every piece of information I can before submitting my vote.
Well, some good games on the slate. Let's go down right down the list, and even though we haven't paid too close attention, let's do a quick pick 'em here. Right now, as we've stated, you've got Utah, Oregon, with a seven, or Utah's a 7-point favorite. Baylor versus Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a 9-point favorite. Georgia, LSU. LSU's a 7-point favorite. Clemson and Virginia, 4-touchdown favorite for Clemson.
That's insane.
And right now, Ohio State's a little over a 2-touchdown favorite. So, Utah, Oregon, who are you taking?
I will take Oregon, and it is partially because before the season, Carter Carls had guessed that Utah would make the playoff.
So you're doing it to spite him?
Yeah, we had to make bold predictions. And so his prediction was Utah to make the playoff, and our Tom Noy's prediction was for Alabama to not make the playoff.
Okay.
And then so Carter asked me which one I thought was more likely, and I said, well, I think Alabama not making the playoff is more likely. So there's a chance here that both of their predictions could happen. So I guess if I was being nice to Carter, I would side with Utah, but I like to give him a hard time.
Especially too, because he picked Navy to beat Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, he did. He's owned that at least.
You know what? I'm going to do the same thing then too. I'll go with Oregon as well. And while we're on it, did you pick a four at the beginning of the year?
I did, and it's not good. I think I included Michigan and Alabama at least, and so I don't remember what the other two teams were. It's not good.
I'm close. I had Ohio State, I had Alabama in there, I had Oklahoma, and I had Clemson.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm fringing.
Yeah. I booked Ohio State, and then obviously that's come back to haunt me.
Okay. Baylor, Oklahoma.
I will go with Oklahoma. I think they'll win again.
I'm going to go there too. Georgia, LSU.
I think LSU will win.
They look tough.
Yeah, I just haven't been that impressed with Georgia this year. I thought Notre Dame probably should have beat Georgia. And I didn't even necessarily like Georgia's game plan against Notre Dame. I thought they allowed Notre Dame to have a chance to win that game when they maybe could have just run it down their throats. But I will go with LSU.
Virginia, Clemson.
I'll go with Clemson. I don't know if they're going to cover the 28.5 point spread, tough, huh? But I think Clemson will.
And Virginia's 9-3.
Yeah, great season for Virginia. It kind of stinks for them to go against Clemson in the conference championship game. But I mean, if they were to win a game like that, people would start taking them a lot more seriously.
And finally, the Ohio State Buckeyes and Wisconsin Badgers.
Yeah, I'll go with Ohio State there.
A lot of red.
Ohio State just looks pretty good, and they might be the best team in the country right now. I think their number one seed is fitting. But I really want to see Ohio State and LSU play against each other, so I hope we get that in the national championship game.
So from here now, you've got conference championships. We'll have some of those postseason awards finalized and taking place during our then bowl layoff until the bowls start playing. And the conversation, I think, nationally within the last week has been, should the playoff expand?
Right.
And you've got some very staunch supporters of both, especially in saying that within the last 2 weeks, you've seen playoff games occurring, you know, within conferences where teams win, they advance, teams lose, they're eliminated.
Right.
What's your stance right now on the playoff system with the four teams? Should it expand to anything? And if so, what would that be?
I'd like to see it expand. I think some of it is, so if Ohio State or LSU lose this weekend, they're still going to be in the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the conference championship games aren't as meaningful. So I think if you expand the playoff, you probably need to it seems we can't be adding more and more games to these college football players' schedules. I think that's a little bit unfair. So I would eliminate the conference championship games, and then you have an extra round of the playoffs. Now, I could be swayed either way. If we take the top eight, or we give the Power Five conferences five spots, and then there's three at-large bids, or maybe one goes to a Group of Five team. I know certainly you're probably going to get a lot of situations where the eight seed's probably not going to have very much of a chance against the one seed, but that's fine. The one seed maybe deserves to be able to play against a team that's not that good if they had such a great season. So I'd like to see it expand. I think a lot of people that love college football really like the idea of like debating who the best team is, and I'd rather it be found out in a playoff format. So I like the playoff at four. I'm glad that it moved to a playoff rather than the BCS system, but I'd like to see it expand out to eight. What about you?
Well, we brought this up on our show the last couple of weeks, and there was a survey taken through the coaching ranks on, you know, whether it should expand, and Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney, he said he was like the most prominent no.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was citing, you know, he said the way we have it right now, every game we have, especially the once we're positioned, every game was a playoff game. Said every game. Duke was a playoff game, South Carolina, and we can kind of snicker certainly on that within whatever conference could be up or down during that year. But he says we have layers of playoffs within the season. The more you expand, the less the season matters, especially if a team so-called already made the playoff. Well, now you're going to have people not playing guys, just like you have in other sports. All of a sudden, games don't matter because everybody is just playing for the playoff and they're in. What they have right now, he's saying, is the best of both worlds, with the four teams and still having conference championships. So I can see it both ways. What's hard to argue right now is, regardless of who has gotten in, I think you can say since the inception of the four-team playoff, the best team probably won.
Yeah. It's done a good job of
it was maybe the outliers, you know, one of those teams that didn't get in, maybe should have got in. Could they have won it? Possibly, but Clemson was by and large the best team last year.
Right.
I think that was pretty clear. So I think there'd have to be some changes. You know, one part of the discussion I always think is interesting is, if you were to expand it, or you were to expand it and eliminate the conference championship, could we not have a month off in between playing?
Right.
You know, I've always said that too. Is, you know, if I'm right now, I'm the best team in the country.
Yeah, I want to play.
I want to keep playing.
You know,
let's go. Let's dial this up. And or maybe it's a week off. You get a bye week. The regular season's over. You then, you know, seed the teams if it is an expanded playoff. So what I think is, and it didn't surprise both Sean and I too, and we talked about it last, is 9 of the 14 coaches that were in favor of the expansion were all in the Big Ten.
And they
were the most overwhelming, and probably because, you know, they've had a conference champion that's been left out.
Right.
Four of the past or sorry, the top, they've been left out of the top four in each of the past three seasons.
Right, right.
It's, which
it seems like it's Ohio State or bust.
To your point, right? To your point is you could do the conference championships really matter?
And right.
You know, I think to the argument that some people are making is during the regular season saying these are playoff games towards the end of the year.
Right.
And maybe they are, but what then you're seeing is the conference championship maybe really isn't.
Right, sure.
The end of the year games, maybe, you know, games 11 and 12, if those matter as far as survive and advance, there could be something to that, but possibly not then the conference championship. And in your thought process on this, did you consider Notre Dame at all and how they would be affected possibly in an expansion that would be eight teams?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that there's... I think Notre Dame would have probably the same access either way. I think Notre Dame's probably has to go undefeated or have one loss against a very good team and a bunch of good wins to get into the playoff, whether it's a four-team race or an eight-team race. Certainly, if you're reserving like five of the eight for the Power Five champions, then you're only talking about three slots that Notre Dame has a chance of getting when, in theory, when you have a four-team playoff, Notre Dame has a chance of getting any four of those slots. But I think that the access would be even, and I think if you eliminate the championship game, obviously then you don't have 13, and no one can use the conference championship against Notre Dame of, okay, we played 13 games and we won a conference championship and you only played 12 games. I think I would like, if this 18 playoff were to happen, more balancing of the schedules nationally. I think no one should play none of the Power 5 teams should play FCS teams. Everyone should play the same number of conference games. How the conferences decide to determine their champion, it can be left up to the conference, but I think they should all play the same number of conference games, which isn't the case currently. So I think there needs to be some more evening out of the schedules nationally, and then I think you can have better conversations of, okay, the Pac-12 champ is just equally as deserving as the Big Ten champ because they all played X amount of conference games and none of them played against FCS teams.
We're talking with Tyler James. We're going to take a quick break, Tyler. When we come back, we'll look forward to the future here of Notre Dame football and what they can accomplish in 2020. You're listening to Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on 96.1 WSBT. And we're back. Early Christmas present for Notre Dame fans. Clay Helton, USC head coach, is back.
That's right.
You got anything on that?
It's surprising to me. It just seems like it's not going to help the recruiting at all. They're just going to be stuck in the same situation. And
we're going on year five, correct?
Yeah, it just seems like he's in a constant lame duck situation. And I don't know how it's almost unfair to him to be able to make the program better. I think they already lost commitments during the season, including one quarterback commitment, because they just assumed Clay Helton wasn't going to be around. And he's staying there, and USC has to recruit well and has the ability to recruit well, and so I think they're taking one of the advantages away from their program by doing this. So it's a surprising situation to me.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it pays off. And Notre Dame and USC traditionally go head-to-head on quite a few guys in the recruiting realm. And that kind of leads us into the next discussion is now as we move into 2020 for Notre Dame.
Right.
Give us a quick update on what's going on recruiting. Early signing days coming up. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, early signing period starts December 18th, runs to the 20th. Notre Dame currently has 17 commitments, a little bit of a smaller size class intentionally based off of scholarship availability and guys that are what they anticipate leaving the roster from this year. Pretty good class. They got some. It's very good at the top. Chris Tyree at running back, Jordan Johnson at wide receiver, borderline five-star prospects depending on who you ask. I like tight end Michael Mayer a lot. I like offensive tackle Tosh Baker a lot. Defensive end Jordan Botello is very good out of Hawaii. And so they have a pretty good class, especially when you look at the top end of it. I think the Rivals 250 came out recently. I think there's a good number of guys in that group. I think even I want to say maybe four guys are in the Rivals 100. So anytime you get top 100 recruits, you're doing something right. And so Notre Dame isn't expected to add much more now moving forward. Ramon Henderson is a cornerback that they've been recruiting. Jalen McMillan is a wide receiver that committed to Washington and remains committed to Washington and saying all the right things despite Chris Peterson resigning. I think Notre Dame's going to still try to keep pushing there. We'll see if they can get a late flip there. They like
any guys early enrolling?
There's a number of guys. Okay. I don't know them off the top of my head, but I do know that they have a sizable amount of guys.
So we'll have that class coming in, and this early signing period certainly has benefited Notre Dame and a lot of guys signing early.
Yep.
As far as the current team and then moving into this offseason in the spring, who are guys they're certainly going to lose to graduation? Who are some guys they could lose, whether it's declaring the NFL, grad transfer, and then who do you think would be, let's go three of your top guys that would be returning players for 2020?
Well, I think the biggest one is Ian Book. They need him to come back, I think, and certainly he has the option to go to the NFL if he wants. He can certainly grad transfer if he wanted to, but I think coming back makes the most sense for him and would be the most helpful for Notre Dame. They're certainly going to lose Julian Okwara and Khalid Kareem at defensive end. So having Dalen Hayes coming back, who already said he was coming back, I think is very important for Notre Dame. Asmar Bilal is a big guy that they will lose for graduation, so they'll have a hole at Buck linebacker. Certainly Chris Fink is gone. Chase Claypool is gone. One guy that we haven't seen this year is Kevin Austin. So him being back next year, I'm interested to see what his role can be in the offense because I think we all believe he can be a very dynamic receiver. Those are really guys I'm watching this offseason. What happens at running back? There's so many guys.
Sure.
Does Tony Jones Jr. come back? He has the option to. Do any of the guys that are younger decide to transfer maybe because there's just such a log jam there? Chris Tyree's coming in. He's going to be competing for playing time right away. So those are kind of the big things that I'm sort of watching going into the offseason.
Tyler, thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll have signing day. We'll have a bowl. And before we know it, I'm sure spring practice will be kicking off. What else can we pay attention to at the South Bend Tribune that you've got going on?
Yeah, we'll be covering all that stuff. We'll have one of my favorite things is our signing day bios that we do with all the recruits to get them know those guys a little bit better. I've been helping out Carter Carls with a couple of those. And so I even hit up Alex Ehrensberger all the way in Germany and got his answers. So you can look forward to that on IndyInsider.com.
I wonder what he eats over there. Probably some good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a great show. We talked about our favorite Thanksgiving food. We got a little bit into the final thoughts on Notre Dame's season here in 2019 as we move into 2020. Bowl season, conference championships, a little sports betting, some you pick 'em. We'll see how we did. Appreciate everyone listening. You've been listening to Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.